Thanks, guys. My name is Tony, recovered alcoholic. First things first, I'd like to thank Kirk coming out, you know, doing service. He's a hard ticket to get, man. And he was referred to me for my man Al B from Vegas, and he vouched for him like we do in the mafia, right? We vouch for people. So if he's bad, you know, talk to Al, don't talk to me. Anyway, I don't think he is. I'm excited. First time ever hearing him. So, yeah, that's all I got. So, Kurt, take it away. I appreciate you coming out.
Thanks. Now you're Al. Now you're on the you're on the fence now. But hi, Kurt, alcoholic. Well, thanks for putting up with me. I had to cancel last time. Right before this meeting, in fact, at this time, we usually have another meeting. There's a group of guys that meet, and I would call it an emotional sobriety meeting. That there's about 10 of us. We meet once a week, and it's a really important meeting because a lot of what we talk about is not talked about in Alcoholics Anonymous, which is a shame, I think. And what I mean by that is one of the things that I didn't know I suffered from, and I was sober 19 years and then drank. I kind of knew on a surface level, but I didn't know at a real gut level. And it was this bondage of self and how it manifests in various ways, sober. And how the conflicts of sober reality can become completely unmanageable. Like I came in here, I kind of grew up in AA. I came in when I was 22, I'm 67. And I had no idea what I was up against. In fact, 20 years in AA, I had no idea what I was up against. I was using the steps as a management tool to live my life. And the way my sponsor said it, I said, when I got released 14 years ago, he said, I called him and I said, look, I got a pretty good idea what I was doing. I said, I was managing my life with spiritual principles. And he said, that's not what you were doing. He said, you were managing your life with your ego's interpretation of spiritual principles. That's very different. And one of the ways it's talked about in the book, it says we had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we couldn't live up to them sober. And there's, I mean, he might even be on here, one of the guys that I was talking to about this is the reason why we can't live up to them is because it's not in our heads. That isn't in our heads. This, I mean, it's the whole point of waking up here. You know, it's the whole point of having a spiritual experience. It's the whole point of having a different perception of the same environment. It's a viewing platform that changes. It's not, I mean, the external changes, but it's a viewing platform. I did this in the very beginning of AA. You know, I say this a lot, and there's my old buddy, Marty. Good to see you, Barney. I thank God I'm not suffering from what's not happening anymore. I'll say it again. Thank God I'm not suffering from what's not happening anymore. See, I suffered from a lot of stuff that wasn't happening sober, meaning I was listening to a narrative in my head that was forming the picture of reality. And most of it didn't happen. And it wasn't happening. But there was no conscious awareness about that. And you can't see it when you're in it. And so basically, it says it in our prayer, God, please relieve me of the bondage of self. Now, why would I be saying a prayer asking to be relieved of the bondage of self if I couldn't be relieved of the bondage of self? If I just thought I had to manage self for the rest of my sobriety, I don't think that's what it's saying. But that was part of the stage-specific growth process I had to go through. I had to do a lot of management for 19 years sober to see that it wasn't it. See that it wasn't it. I'm not a success, I'm a successful failure here. My biggest growth points came from my biggest collapses. And I didn't know that's how it works. I read it, I don't know how many thousands of times, but I never heard it. I always heard it as how I work it, rather than descriptive. How it works, and the way my sponsor described it to me, he said, look, there are principles, laws, and values that are in perfect harmony. You might call it the world of the spirit. He said, you're out of harmony with that. And these 12 steps are 12 gentle ways to bring you back into harmony. Now, I disagreed with him on the gentle part, because I didn't think it was so gentle. But to bring you back in harmony. And then when that happens, there's experience of presence. You know, in the book it says, may you find him now. And they even describe it, which is really crazy. I never saw that either. It says, let me just paraphrase. When you enter the world of the spirit, you can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Your fears fall from you. You can look the world in the eye. I mean, it's very descriptive, right? Any of those promises are very descriptive of what it looks like when you're consciously aware of the fact that you're in the world of the spirit. Now, I never was out of the world of the spirit. I didn't know that. I just was totally unconscious of the fact that that was going on. And our book said, you have a daily reprieve based on this. What you really have, and the emphasis is on really, it's not on time, is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of the spiritual condition. And how that's maintained is not through the spirit. It's maintained through the mental condition that keeps telling me I'm spiritually sick. See, I don't buy that. I don't buy that. And when I experience a sense of grace or a sense of release or a sense of peace, it revealed that. I didn't figure that out. It revealed unconditional love. It revealed, see, this is a living reality. It's as much a fact as we are. That's pretty much a fact. So it was about, well, when I left the meeting just a minute ago, I said, I'm going to get some popcorn and watch the show and maybe I'll show up, you know. It's like, this is what it is. In another program, they say this, they say in my partners program, they say, how do we know this is possible for us? We see it in those who walk among us. See, I saw it in guys that there were certain people that I could recognize something in them. I didn't know what it was at the time. I just thought they were cool and they had something I didn't have. I didn't realize till much later that what was recognizing what was in them was in me. I had a guy, I'll tell you short, so I talked in this out in Malibu at this meeting, and the guy came up to me afterwards and he said, I really want what you have. I said, really? And he said, yeah, I said, really? And he goes, yeah. I said, would you stand over there until we get done with the line and then I'll talk to you. And he came up and he said, can you tell me how to get it? And I said, I can. I said, you ready? I'm going to tell you how to get what I have. said, when you leave this meeting, I want you to go to a liquor store. I want you to buy a bottle of vodka. I want you to wreck your friggin' life. And he had the same look some of you guys have. I said you want what I have. That's how I got it. I drank to a point where I was surrendered to a point that I'd never been surrendered to before. And I said, you're mistaken what you think you want. I said, what you want is what you have. And what you have is recognizing what I have. You're looking outward. You need to look inward. You're already carrying it. You already got it. The guy turned around and walked off. I haven't talked to him since. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but see, I didn't know that. I didn't know that what I was looking for, I was looking with. I didn't know that that like the book said, that I was blocked. I didn't know there were obstacles that were blocking me from this great reality that's deep down in every one of us. And when that veil parted, all I can say is, like I said, I experienced a sense of peace. I experienced a sense of this existential crisis of unworthiness disappeared. I didn't have to be better than, I didn't have to be less than. There wasn't this back and forth play. I could just be who I really was, and it wasn't who I thought I was. I recognize that right in inventory. I thought when I wrote inventory, I was writing about me. And I remember Don Pritz saying one time, he said, you're not writing inventory to find out who you are. You're writing inventory to find out who you're not. What I've become based on this condition of self that I'm misidentified with. And it says it in the book 100 ways, but I didn't have eyes to see it. Like it says, our actor. It doesn't say my actor. It says our actor. It's one actor manifesting, you know, 104 ways on this Zoom platform. One condition manifesting 104 different ways. The condition is what? Self. It's this condition of self. This bondage of self. See, I thought they were talking about me. They weren't. They were talking about the condition that was driving me. Very different. I mean, we know it when we talk to a new guy, right? We're not talking to a new guy. He ain't there. We're talking to the condition that's driving him. That's why we come in here and we listen to meetings. We kind of come in here and we start listening to people and we start identifying, we think, with people. We're not identifying with people. We're identifying with the condition that's driving them. That's why we laugh and that's why we go, oh yeah, I did that, you know. The problem is there's a mistaken identity. And I, you know, some people would say that you're identified as your persona or however you want to say it. I think it's much deeper than that. And that's what you guys told me, you know, that's where I learned this. I learned this from you guys. I learned this from people that reflected this back to me. I was asking all the wrong questions. I was asking all the wrong questions when I first came in and you said I was powerless. You know what? When they said, you're powerless, you know what I said? Okay, so what do I have to do? I mean, it's a total contradiction. Wait a minute, I said you're powerless. Well, I know, but what do I have to do? See, I missed the point, I missed it. You can't do anything. So what do? I mean, it's a total paradox, right? You go to meetings, you listen to other people, you come into a group and you sit, or I did, I came in and I wasn't present at all when I first came in. How I came in was like this. I'd come in 5 minutes late And in my head, my narrative, this condition was talking to me, and it said, you better sit down, everybody's going to be looking at you. But I got to pee. I don't want to get up, so I'll sit there and be completely uncomfortable in the meeting. And the whole time I'm listening to a dialogue in my head. I'm not listening to the meeting. See, it was that internal dialogue that was there long before I drank. My drinking was a solution to that. It quieted that condition of self. It quieted it. I had that sober. And I thought that the answer to that was to manage it. That's what I thought. And I don't believe that anymore. I think you can have freedom from that rather than just relief. And I think that has to do with a lot of what they talk about in 10 and 11, because that's been my experience. It's funny how I never saw in the fifth step where it said the exact nature of the wrongs. I never saw the exact nature. I never saw this thing that's driving me. I didn't see it. I couldn't see it. So when I talk about the bondage of self, I'm not talking about a thing. I'm talking about no thing. It's a narrative in the head. You might even say it's a mode of thinking. I mean, our big book says the main problem centers in the mind, doesn't it? Doesn't say it centers in the spirit. Says it centers in the mind. I got a mind that tells me unbelievable things. And I've listened to enough fifth steps that it's told you the same thing. And it drove me. I mean, it's written I don't know how many times in the book, we're a victim of a delusion. It says I'm a victim of a delusion. What does that mean? I mean, it means I'm not seeing with any kind of clarity, lucidity. I'm not seeing truthfully. I'm seeing my view is obscured. I think we talked about this in another meeting about inventory, the example they give us in inventory about Mr. Brown's attention to my wife, right? I totally missed that whole example. I'm like, geez. Like, you know, they give you a little hint. They say you might be worried that he's going to, you know, expose his mistress. Well, geez, yeah. You know, I have a direct experience with that. When I was in relationships with women, I was never monogamous. And I was always jealous. I was always worried about somebody paying attention to my girlfriend. Now, I never made the connection that because I was being, running around on them, that it had a connection to what was going on. They say it in Mr. He might get my job at the office. Now, why would I think that? If I'm showing up 100%, if I'm showing up 40, 60 hours a week, I'm doing the very best job I can do, and I'm showing up, the last thing in my mind would be that I'm going to lose my job. But if you throw this little thing in here, I was padding my expense account. Well, there might be an inkling that I might lose my job subconsciously. Like I didn't even know it consciously. And, you know, people had told me that, you know, guys had told me that, said nothing has any meaning except for the meaning you're giving it. And that just didn't make any sense to me because I was totally unconscious of the meaning I was giving it. Because of some of the actions that were produced and some of the stuff that was going on in my picture. I missed the example in the book. I missed it, totally missed it. The way Don said it to me was he said, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. Hey, there's my girl. Hey, Kate, good to see you. And Linda and I were talking about this the other day, and And this is true in Al-Anon AA. It's all the, it's like, let me use the people pleasing thing. So when you see there is no such thing as people pleasing, what you're really doing is it's a self-centered, self-seeking behavior manifesting, and how it manifests like this. See, I think I'm pleasing you. I'm not pleasing you. I'm using you to manage the internal condition of dis-ease that I'm having. That's what I'm doing. And when I see it that way, it changes the thing I'm seeing. It's the same thing of drinking when I got here drinking. When you said I was powerless, I just thought I had to go to meetings, work the steps. See, I had to do a lot of things to get over this thing. And if you were like me, I kept drinking. And then I'd go out in the car and I'd sit there and I'd be drinking and I wonder, well, I guess I really don't want this. See, I had to give an excuse for why I kept drinking. I had to come up with a reason. Oh, you're just never gonna get it. Or somebody just, I heard this in the beginning, people would say, just don't drink, and I couldn't pull that off. Maybe if they'd have said, just don't drink, hang out with us. Maybe just hang out with us 24 hours a day till you can get out from behind this. Maybe if there was just a little more information than just don't drink. If I could have pulled that off, I wouldn't have come to you guys. I wouldn't have gone in front of the judge four times and him keep going, I don't know what's wrong with you. I told you last time you were in front of me, if you drink again, you're going to prison. See, he didn't know what was wrong either because he didn't understand alcoholism. And it's inevitable until I get released from that. Until I get released from the obsession that drives me into an allergy, I'll end up doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. This is alcoholism. It's another way it's talked about, and the way I understand it in the book when it says, when we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis. Well, see, I first read that like, oh, I caused myself to be alcoholic by drinking too much. But I don't see it that way anymore. I see this self-imposed crisis is this imposition of self, this condition of self I can't get rid of. Can't make enough money, can't be in the right relationship. This imposition of self, it was there before I drank. It's why I drank. What does it look like? Oh, I'm not good enough. I'm less than. This is all way before I ever drank. This imposition of self is how I became alcoholic. I drank and I drank and I drank, and at some point I lost volition. I lost the ability to say no. I crossed this, sometimes we call it an invisible line. And I had to drink at that point. And that's what I found out in the big book. I found that out in the big book. I didn't find it in meetings. I found out what I suffered from. This is why you drink. When I drank at 19 years, I had a guy follow me out in the parking lot. A bunch of people were saying, look, you need to go to different meetings that treat you a certain way. Everybody knows you around here. So I went to this meeting. I didn't want to go. It was a men's stag. And I complained about my wife and how she left me and screwed everything up. I totally forgot about me drinking for 2 years. That wasn't in the picture. She's the one that messed up, right? We blame everybody else. And he followed me out to my plumbing truck. And he said, can I make a suggestion? I said, sure you can. And the only reason I said that was because I wanted him to hurry up and finish what he was saying so I could go home and drink. He said, I noticed you raised your hand as a newcomer. I said, yeah, that's because I was drinking this morning. He said, well, stop it. He said, you're not a newcomer. He said, every time you raise your hand as a newcomer, you put more guilt and remorse on the condition you're trying to extinguish. Stop it. We didn't design that for this. Everybody knows you here. He said, the reason we designed that raise your hand newcomer so you could get to know people that you don't know. He said, everybody knows you. And he walked away from me. And I quit raising my hand as a newcomer. About 3 weeks later, I was complaining about my wife leaving, how she screwed everything up again, you know. And he followed me back out to my plumbing truck. And he said, can I make a suggestion? I said, yeah, you can. And this time I was listening to him because I heard a resonance of truth in what he said before. And he said, if I write a prayer for you to say, will you say it? And I said, yeah, I will. And he wrote a prayer, and the prayer was, please give Rhonda the very best that life has to offer. Please give her health, happiness, and prosperity. And please give her a peace and understanding she's never experienced before. And he said to me, I guarantee if you say this prayer, it'll work. Now, you guys got to excuse my language, but my response was good because that bitch needs a change. That was what I was seeing. See, that's my view. What happened 3 months after I said the prayer was the prayer happened to me. And I got released. Changed my whole perception of prayer. I thought it was going to happen to her. And I guess it did, because based on the principles and the way I treat her and what I've done in the program, it's transformed our relationship. And we're good friends today. And that's the healing power behind the steps. That relationship needed to implode. It was completely dysfunctional. It was completely an alcoholic. Alcoholism affects everybody in the family. See? And so I just think it's amazing that, see, I was just misinformed. Don calls it a mistake in my thinking. I think it's a little more than that. I needed to be able to see with some kind of clarity besides my thinking mind, because it doesn't know anything. Activity knows nothing about stillness. It knows nothing about it. We even say it in the prayer. I had the prayer all backwards, the Serenity Prayer. I said, God, grant me the serenity. I'll change one word, necessary for acceptance, change, and wisdom. See, I thought if I accepted things, I'd get serenity. I had it backwards. Problem was, I couldn't accept it. I kept trying to believe in stuff I couldn't believe in. I kept trying to believe in stuff I was supposed to believe in. It didn't work. And part of this is just doing what you guys said, doing what the book says. Be quick to see where religious people are right, not that they're right. It says where. I never read that before. I never read being convinced of self, you know, manifested in various ways what defeated us. I didn't know that wasn't me. I thought it was me. I didn't know it was a condition that was driving me the whole time, and I was identified as it. I tried to kill myself 3 times, I thought. Then I realized I wasn't trying to kill myself. I was trying to kill the self, I was trying to kill the narrative in my head. I was trying to say, you know, sometimes you hear you're killing the wrong person. Well, that's true. But I didn't know that. I thought it was me. And that's what happens. You can't see it from the condition, but when you're separated from it, you can see it. There's a space, you know, there's a space in it. And that's the beauty of being here. The beauty of being here is that, God, we're all in the same boat, right? Some of us in a deeper degree of the disease and some of us not. It doesn't make us any better or less than. It's just where we are on our journey. And I know there's plenty of people, I'm looking at them right here, that I know that are in this meeting that really know what it is to be unselfish when they're working with some new guy that they know. They know he doesn't know what he's up against. I mean, we know every move they're going to make before they do. Because we've made all those moves. It's even frustrating sometimes, isn't it? Very frustrating. You go, oh my gosh, he's as big a knucklehead as I was, you know? It's funny. It's like, I have a friend down here, Bill. Bill says, he said, just get in the car. He said, we can't explain why you need to get in the car. Just get in the car. Meaning come to the meetings, you know, you'll start to kind of figure this out as you come to the meetings. You finally get pulled out of the orbit of your own mind and you hear somebody else. We're so self-centered. We're like, we're in this head, you know, and then eventually we listen in meetings and we start to hear things. People say we thaw out here, you know. I think that's a bare beginning. I think the big, big test comes with being sober a while. You know, I mean, you can just, it's pretty easy. Am I driven by fear? Do I have a narrative every day in my head? Am I projecting a reality that's not happening? No, I'm sober. I'm sober, though. I think we're missing the point. I think the freedom that's here is a real freedom. And what a grace that is. That's all I ever wanted. That's why I was drinking. I just wanted to be able to be in my body and in the moment, present. That's all. I just wanted that. Now, I didn't know I wanted that. I thought I wanted something outside, money, her, praise, all the different things that. And when you get a sense of well-being, you realize those are just things that might come and might not come, but they don't define you as a person. And some of the relationships we have here, I said this to somebody the other day, are closer to me than my blood relatives. Because I couldn't have picked the guides that were put in my life. I couldn't have picked them. I look back on it, I think there's no way. It's like Joseph Campbell said, he said, you know, when you look back over your life, it's almost like you look back and you see, it seems like there was these invisible helping hands the whole time helping you. When I was in the penitentiary, I mean, just different situations. Drinking again at 19 years. So I feel very blessed to be able to show up. not cancel you on you guys again. Didn't know I was putting Al on the hook tonight. So, you know, I think I'm about done. I think I've said all I can say. I'm just really glad to be here. I'm really glad to be sober. And I'm really glad to be a part of a fellowship where we have a way of living. I thought the menu was the meal. The menu is not the meal. I worshiped the menu in AA for a long time. The menu is not the meal. The menu is to bring you to the meal. And I think the meal is on page 55. And so I just, I'm really, really glad to be here. So thank you. Thanks for listening. Maybe I'll hear from you guys.
We are really glad that you're here too. Man, that was a lot. I think I'm going to be sitting with this for a while, and I'm probably, once it gets published to the website, I will probably be listening to it several hundred times. I'm going to open it up for shares now. If there's anybody that would like to share anything about what resonated about what Kurt shared, anything that really meant anything to you. So go ahead and raise your virtual hands. I took notes. I've got a whole page of notes here, but it's more about like, wow, Lisa, you really need to think on this. And one of them was mistaken identity. It's the condition that's driving me and you and them. And that's not my identity. That blew my mind. So thank you. Got some hands now.
Josh?
How's it going, family? Josh Baker, grateful, sober, recovered alcoholic.
Good
Kurt,
to see
thanks,
you,
man. Yeah, great to see you too. That was fantastic. The menu is not the meal. The menu is not the meal. I'm assuming the menu being like the big book and the meal is the results of the results. I may be misinterpreting that, but I can tell you that that was my meal once upon a time. I mean, I had 10 and a half years and ended back up out there. I heard a guy in a meeting the other day that had 52 years, and my ears prop up when I hear that amount of years, you know, and going back out. And it just reminds me that it's the now, right? It's staying in the moment and trying to actually practice these principles in all of my affairs, not just an hour in here where I'm trying to look good and sound good, but out there when I'm driving around town and the kids got to go to soccer practice and it's 20 miles away, but they got to be there in 4 minutes, or the boss drops something in your lap at the deadline, or the ex-spouse is making a reasonable request, but my brain is interpreting it as an unreasonable request. For a lot of years, I spent in these rooms thinking that reading and studying the steps was taking them and living the steps. And boy, was I mistaken, you know? So I know that the steps is a pathway to where it is that we want to get. The steps are also probably not the treasure, you know, but I know it's the treasure map, and just really appreciate you, man. You always pack a wonderful message, and I'll always play hooky any day to come hear you. So anyway, appreciate you, buddy. That's it.
Thanks, Josh. Grace?
Hi, I'm Grace, grateful recovering alcoholic. Thank you so much for your share. So much resonated with me, but I wrote down this, and you said this, I think, in the very beginning. I'm grateful I'm not suffering for what's not happening anymore. And I was like, wow, that was so simple, but so powerful, because how many times am I suffering from what's not even happening anymore? Just powerful for me, just hearing that from someone out myself. And then something else you said that really resonated with me was, until I get relief from the obsession that leads me to go to the thing that I have an allergy to, I still have work to do. And that was so powerful for me, because, you know, I haven't had a drink in 2.5 years. But one of the things that I recognized a couple of months ago was that obsession was still there. Those cravings for there, that inability to sit still was still there. And I just am so grateful that something inside of me said, you need to do more. You need to go deeper. There's more yet there to do. And I can sit calm more and more day by day, but just so powerful. The principles, laws, and values that must be in perfect harmony. That really resonated with me. I think being able to hear somebody who has that true mental peace that the alcohol fixed, I heard that just throughout your story, and that just really resonated with me. So I just appreciate, I'm so glad I'm here today, and I think I'll keep coming back, but that I'll pass.
Thank you, Grace.